And welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Unrest Podcast. I'm Madeline Green.
I'm Caitlin Stansel.
And I'm Carter Coyle. So glad to be back with y'all. It does feel good to be in the swing of things, getting things done, looking up ghost stories, successful working women.
If yes. Only this was our day jobs.
Right? Only.
So we are going to take a little trip to Arizona for this episode. Carter teased ahead at the end of episode 1 to what we'll be talking about. And Madeline's going to be the focus of our real life haunt. Ooh. In a little bit. But I wanted to start off kind of talking about this little restaurant called The Haunted Hamburger. It tells you all you need to know in its name.
And that's what they offer.
Yes, it's in Jerome, Arizona.
Ooh, okay. And so, Madeline, did you actually go there when you went on your trip?
Yes. So me and my friend Haley took a trip to Arizona a few weeks ago, and we did indeed visit Jerome and the Haunted Hamburger.
So that inspired the theme for our episode.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what do we need to know about a hamburger helper?
The Hamburglar.
Well, the ghost actually has nothing to do with hamburgers. Instead, this ghost likes hammers.
Mm.
Kind of interesting. Great. On their website, they have like a little section all about their story, and that's kind of what I'm going off of right now. But just to kind of give you an idea and take you to Jerome, Arizona a little bit, set the scene. This town is built into basically the side of a mountain. It's when I think of Arizona, for some reason, I just imagine it being very flat and desert, and it's not like that whatsoever. It's very mountainous.
And especially if you're coming from like the Grand Canyon area down into Jerome, the last few miles coming into the small town are windy. And especially at nighttime, that's when we drove it. It was very dark. I was kind of glad I couldn't see over the edge, but it was very windy for like 10 miles. And you could look out and see like the lights of other towns, but being in a Dodge Caravan minivan on the side of this mountain and not really knowing what I was getting into, by the time I got to the bottom, the essence of brake smell was very, very pungent.
Wow, no joke. Okay.
And this town is like a little sleepy town. It's really small. And I would imagine you guys went there at night. Were there a lot of people out and about at that point?
When we got into Jerome, it was nighttime. And it was kind of, it was on a Sunday. And so there really wasn't very many people going to the Haunted Hamburger. We saw maybe 2 people. It was almost like a ghost town, honestly.
Wow.
That's the theme here.
Yeah, I was going to say it's called the wickedest city in the West.
Okay. Anyways, back to the Haunted Hamburger. So Michelle and Eric Jurison, they acquired this restaurant, and it was this building that was old and abandoned, and it needed a lot of work done to it to kind of get it up to what it is today so that people could go there and dine. And it's, I guess I would describe it as like very eclectic kind of. It's a little funky, and they definitely use this haunted history as a part of their decor and capitalize on that, I guess. And some other pictures I saw, it looks like they have a lot of pictures on the wall that, you know, supposedly show ghost. They really want to go for the full haunted effect here. But when they acquired this building, that's kind of when all this haunted stuff started happening. And I love this little quote that they have in their story on their website. It says, "As with all old buildings, when inhabitants take initial occupation, from its walls come the spirits to observe and sometimes greet the newcomers." And I feel like that's a common theme with a lot of spooky stories.
It's just very matter of fact.
So these spirits really seem to be curious, and they think that they might be some frustrated tradesmen from long ago. And the reason for that is because they really love tools.
Oh.
Specifically, they like hammers. I don't know why, but that's their tool of choice. They say that one hammer, then two hammer, then three of them, they started disappearing, and they were wondering, okay, what's going on here? Someone's stealing them. What's happening? Until owners said, hey, have you met the ghost yet? And beware, they like hammers. They just like mentioned this offhand, not knowing that they were having this problem as they were redoing this building. But the ghost didn't keep the hammers forever. They started reappearing, showing up in really conspicuous places. So the website goes on to say that what followed next was literally too in your face to ignore. They say that one day in the middle of repairs, one of the owners remembers that he needed to go upstairs to finish a project. And just as he reached the top floor, a door that he was standing next to slammed and it nearly smashed him right in the face.
Dang.
So these might not be the nicest ghost. But the thing is that the owner, he had just kind of sealed up the building's windows. It was all kind of taped off because they were doing all these repairs and there was no air conditioning or air current going through the house. So really the things that you might use to explain this off, those were not available as an explanation. There were other odd occurrences that were happening. Owners and guests at the Haunted Hamburger, they had seen cans flying off shelves, the hot water being turned on in the middle of the night. And then there were distinct smells in the stairwell there. A lot of photos have been taken where guests have captured the vague image of a woman there. So what I love about their website is they say like this whole story about the hammers and how they disappeared and then started reappearing in weird places. But they say, leave your hammers at home. So don't bring them with you if you go visit.
Don't take the hammer. That sounds like good advice.
So it sounds like they might have a few different kind of ghosts haunting their restaurant, but I just love like how specific these ghosts are to what they are after.
Right. Well, we and Haley didn't see any ghosts, but we definitely visited. And
like Caitlin was alluding to, or maybe even outright said that this is an area that's known for its historic copper mining. And I'm seeing a little picture online that says Historic Jerome $1 billion copper camp. So they are definitely proud of that history. So it makes sense that all those tools that she referenced, this was a huge part of their history. And Jerome was first founded in 1876 and was a U.S. Centennial City in 1976. I don't know exactly what it means to be U.S. Centennial City, but it probably means you're official now.
We're really old.
It was the home to the wealthiest mine in the world, the country, owned by one man, and the whole town was declared a national landmark eventually. So that's small town, maybe most of us have never heard of, but it actually was a pretty big deal internationally at one point. And it is
that's kind of interesting considering pictures I saw, because it seems I wouldn't say run down, but
yeah,
definitely not like pristine and like the wealthiest city in the world.
Right.
It's a, and I feel like if we saw it during the day that I feel like some of that is kind of like a put on, if that makes sense.
It's supposed to feel like an old abandoned copper town.
Yeah.
I don't know why they had a country accent. Do they sound like they're from the South in Arizona? this is from visitarizona.com, and it says that it's the third largest town. It was the third largest town in Arizona at its peak. But like I just said, the wealthiest mine in the world. The boom town was called the wickedest city in the West in 1903. It at one point, this probably is a little different than it was when you saw it, Madeline, but at one point it had 37 bars, 13 bordellos, and 4 churches. And it was the largest producer of copper, gold, and silver in Arizona in the 1920s before all the mines closed in 1953. And then it became the largest ghost town in the West. And in the 1960s, the town was restored with historic accuracy and revitalized as an arts community. So kind of trying to preserve that history, but thinking, hey, we can't depend on these local mining efforts to maintain our economy. So if we're going to survive, we've got to create some art studios, galleries, apparently a monthly art walk. And they have some wine tasting rooms, shops, restaurants, hotels, bed and breakfast. So it's a cool destination because you have all of that artsy stuff, but also the background of this mining town. It says that you kind of can get a snapshot of the lifestyle of what wealthy mine owners might have experienced 100 years ago. And, you know, all of that seems really fleeting. If your mine's closed or you know, whether operations shut down or the weather is bad, I mean, it sounds like kind of a dangerous business model, but.
There's another place that we didn't get to visit, but I wanted to. It's called the Jerome Grand Hotel. And it's like kind of up at the highest point on the mountain. I'll show you.
Ooh, cool.
It's a really big, kind of different looking hotel. And that's supposed to be haunted as well. So you can kind of, if you look online, you can see the picture of how all this stuff is kind of just stuck on the end of this mountain.
I'm hopping around a little bit here, but I should mention that when it was the largest copper mine in Arizona, they were producing 3 million pounds of copper a month. So people literally Dang. Came from all over the world to Arizona, you know, hoping to work and find a new way of life. So that at that point, they had kind of a peak of like 15,000 people living there versus 450 people who live there permanently today. So that's
wow.
crazy. It says that really what happened in terms of the decline was that the Great Depression slowed down mining operations and World War II increased the demand for copper. But after the war, everything, you know, kind of went downhill in terms of demand for copper and the economy was completely dependent on that. So the Phelps Dodge mine closed in 1953 and the 50 to 100 people who were left, I was thinking maybe it was going to say 1,000, but 50 to 100 people promoted the town as a historic ghost town. So they kind of had to pivot their promotions. So we're now artsy and ghosty. Anyway, that's it. But Madeline, I'm curious, how did y'all, since your main trip was to Sedona, so what made you kind of add Jerome to your list of places to stop?
So I had looked up, you know, different places in Arizona, and I knew that we were going to be in Sedona. We were going to go check out the Grand Canyon. And that was kind of on the way back down to Phoenix, where we would fly out of. And everything I had read said that, you know, you really needed to go and stop by Jerome just to see it. It's just a really neat little town. And so, unfortunately, it was really late, so we didn't get to see it, but we at least say that we had been there. And
so pivoting to our real life haunt, we're kind of use our example today. So did you actually see any ghosts there, or what was your experience while you were in Jerome and really, I guess, all over Arizona?
So unfortunately, while we were in Jerome, we did not see any ghosts. I could definitely, you know, it was a very weird feeling because there was nobody there, like nobody on the streets. Like I said, we saw like two people that was in the restaurant. So it was definitely a ghost town, kind of an eerie feeling. However, it was like a Sunday and we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm sure it's not as hopping as it used to be, but definitely got some interesting feelings there. But as far as, you know, all of Sedona, where we went for the main part of our trip, I had always wanted to go there. It just seemed like a really peaceful kind of finding yourself, grounding yourself. I never saw any specific ghosts, but I did get a lot of different feelings from the trip. And so I'll share some of those with you. So we got into Sedona and we had like a full schedule of things to do just because we didn't really have that many days. Honestly, if I go back, like I'll have to go for like a week or two. You can't do everything on a weekend type trip. There's just too much. But what a beautiful place. Literally, you're driving from Phoenix the last like 10 miles. All of a sudden, you see these huge red rocks coming up out of the earth. They're beautiful, just kind of really breathtaking and kind of hard to explain. Like they just kind of come out of nowhere.
From pictures that I saw that you took, it looks kind of otherworldly and not like the rest like of Arizona.
Almost Martian landscape.
Right. And I think that's where a lot of the idea of like the extraterrestrial,
that makes sense.
Bunch of Native American type things. We did what is called a sound bath. where we went into this room and lay down on these mats, and a woman played the, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of them, but they're like called sound bowls.
I'd never heard of that until you told us about it, that you were going to a sound spa.
Yeah, it was definitely a really cool experience. It kind of brought out, you know, an emotional side to things. And it was definitely something very interesting to hear and partake in. Unfortunately, I would tell you to make sure that you go to the bathroom before you do the sound bath, or you will have to go into the corner of the parking lot.
And then cover it up with rocks afterwards.
So embarrassing. I'm laying there. I have to pee so bad. I'm like, I've already paid for this experience. We're not.
It was like an hour long, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we're not that far into the experience. And I'm like, I don't want to ruin it. So, you know, I jump up, go outside, can't find a bathroom, literally pee in the corner of this place. Come back in.
You did not.
Yes, I did. And fully meditated. And was good to go. But a really cool experience, really like kicked off the whole trip of, you know, kind of meditating, finding yourself.
I'm sure it set the tone for sure about what the whole trip was going to be like.
It really did. I really researched the place and wanted to find things. There's a lot of touristy things that you can do there. I'm not really into that type of thing. Devil's Bridge, that was a lot of fun. Beautiful views, nothing really super, I mean, besides the beautiful views and stuff, there wasn't paranormal activity there that I felt. However,
what was that hike like? How would you describe it?
Devil's View was the name of it, you said?
Devil's Bridge.
Okay, that sounds
for like me, the hike was not hard. That terrible.
Just from what I've read, it's not like hiking on the East Coast where there's a lot of trees and you can't see the drop-offs right beside you. And it's more of a gradual incline. From what I read, it's a bit more treacherous and like more like rock climbing at points.
I've done some hikes like that. It's rough stuff.
Yeah, it was a beautiful hike though. And it was a lot of fun. Of course, I looked into how many people have died on Devil's Bridge.
Jesus, and Mads, I hope you look after.
It was after, but before the Grand Canyon, because I looked that too. But there was a one poor mom who was there with her. It was a mom, husband, and daughter. The daughter was on the bridge. The dad was taking a picture of her, and the mom like stood up and tripped and then fell over the cliff and died. So not like a super safe place. There's not any, you know, no enforcement of like, don't get close to the edge. It's a free for all. You know, you have to wait in a long line to take the pictures, but worth it in a beautiful place. After that, we decided, I found this guy who does these tours and really shows this type of Native American ritual called the medicine wheels.
Ooh.
And so we get to his house, which his backyard is the Red Rocks.
Oh, his house? You go to his house?
Yes. So brave. We go to his house, and his backyard are these huge red rocks, like perfect. Couldn't even imagine a better setting to wake up to every morning. And he shows us the medicine wheels that he has around his yard. He first cleanses us with sage.
Cool.
And then he shows us the medicine wheels. And he has built all of these different type of medicine wheels around his property. And so we're going to do a real ritual with him. And so he gives us this cornmeal, and you walk into the middle of the medicine wheel and you make a prayer to God. And then you dump the cornmeal into the middle of the circle. And then you come out of the circle and you begin to walk the circle kind of at a slower pace. And he said, you know, you'll feel a presence or something that tells you when to stop and step out of the circle. And then he was like, I'll tell you more about, you know, where you stopped and what that kind of means. So I'm not even sure how to explain when I was told to like stop and step out of the circle.
You just knew?
I just knew. I have no idea why.
Wow.
And then when he went on to explain what that actually meant, it was so spot on. Like, it just gave me chills. Like, it was the strangest thing. And, you know, he said, wherever you stop.
It had to do with your prayer?
Kind of the prayer and just like kind of your, where you were at that moment in time as far as your life and your thinking and that kind of thing.
Wow. Is the wheel really big? What is the wheel made of?
It's just it, like in his backyard, and it is with crystals and different types of things. And it's like a circle, like a circle in the middle. And that had some blue stones and crystals. Oh, and then a bigger circle on the outside, but it had a walkway to the middle, not just a huge circle. And some are small, some are big. This one was like the original medicine wheel that the Native Americans used. He did a lot of other ones that he kind of thought of. Very interesting man. His name's Dana.
Shout out Dana. This sounds so cool.
So that part of the prayer ritual and everything like that, that was amazing. I definitely felt, you know, a presence tell me to step out of the circle. But I will say, you know, people in Sedona are definitely different. He was definitely quirky. He was an old hippie, alluded to the fact that he might have possibly lived with the Charles Manson gang.
Oh, okay.
At one time. So definitely a really cool type of man. The second part of the tour was a vortex tour. And in Sedona, these red rocks between them and stuff, they carry a higher magnetic field and energy. And it said that you can feel that. So he took us on a hike between some of the mountains. And probably my favorite part of the whole trip was we're walking and I get this full body chill. And then this like ringing in my ears.
Ooh.
And literally, I never said anything about it. And as soon as I felt that, he comes up and he's like, oh, yep, the energy's changing. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Whoa, that's kind of hard to make up. I mean,
yeah. Wow. And it was. You could definitely feel an energy change and a different type of energy. And Haley felt it as well. He said you could feel like some people get like a tingling in their fingers. And I'm pretty sure she felt that. So it was definitely a really neat experience. Took us by a really pretty like river stream. He told me that they like for full moons and stuff that they have like drum circles out there and a lot of really interesting things. But what was really funny about him was he's really into nature and the earth. And on the way, he would stop and tell us about the trees and about this rock and different things. And then on our way back to his house, it was the cutest thing. He would like wave them goodbye.
Like he had a relationship with them.
Oh my goodness. That's like so sweet, and appreciated them.
Yeah. And he would like touch the tree, you know, and it was almost like he was telling them like, see you later type thing. It was really neat to see. And he was, you know, someone I could have spent hours talking to, like just a really, really interesting old hippie in Sedona.
Very what I think is cool about Sedona, and you did mention like what that area was called, but a vortex. It's kind of interesting, like where the red rocks come together, those are considered vortexes, and they're just these really special places of higher energy, and you can bring your crystals to these places to recharge them. It's just kind of cool how spiritually connected this part of the country is.
And another cool thing that I didn't realize is actually Asheville, North Carolina, those mountains have vortexes as well.
Ooh, okay.
And a lot of them have been known to be even more powerful than out in Sedona, which is pretty crazy.
Well, dang, we're going to have to go.
Yeah. To round up my real life spiritual journey, on our way to the Grand Canyon, we stopped at this roadside Native American market, I guess you would call it. I got this, it's like, it could be a beaded necklace or it could be a bracelet, and they called them ghost beads. And she gave me a whole little article about the beads, and it said, you know, they keep away negative energy, nightmares, different stuff like that. So I wore them, but I would take them off at night because they were kind of tight on my wrist. But then for two nights in a row, I wore these beads on my wrist, and both of those nights I had extremely terrible nightmares that woke me up to like a pounding heart. And so I was right? And so
not keeping the ghost away from you.
Yeah.
And bringing it in.
The best was by the second night I wake up, it's about 2 or 3, and my husband wakes up too. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm taking these beads off. Like, these aren't working. They're not for me. And since then, I have slept through the night and not had a bad dream. So who knows?
They're supposed nice to have, keep away but nightmares, not to wear.
Yeah, but I'm not going to wear them at night.
Maybe not during the day either.
Yeah. But that was my trip. It was a great trip. If you get the opportunity to go to Sedona, do it. You won't regret it.
It must have felt nice to get out and do something like that too.
Yeah, it did.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing your real life experiences out in Sedona.
Wait, tell us about this Netflix show that you have been pitching us on.
I think I have one more episode that I still have to watch, but I think it's called Near Death. And the first, and each episode is a little bit different, and each episode gets progressively a little more out there. But the first one is just
our kind of thing.
Is yeah, exactly. They get you hooked, and then they start throwing crazy stuff at you, and you're like, wait a second. But that first episode is about near-death experiences. So kind of your typical, while people are doing medical, you know, having some sort of medical operation, and they see themselves from above, and then find out later they really died on the table, you know, and kind of all these similarities in these near-death experiences, which I find kind of reassuring, because, I mean, they come back to this world, quote unquote, in full belief and knowledge that there is something after this life, because they experienced it just as real as us sitting here. So
I do love that idea.
Yeah, that's like, and there's such similarities in their stories that it makes you think this cannot just be you know, something that they made up or dreamed. But anyway, so I found that episode really cool. And then they kind of get into like mediums and people who can maybe communicate with with ghosts or people who've moved on. That episode is pretty cool, but they also kind of talk about like how some of the information they find is on Facebook, and so it may be easy to just make it up. So you kind of have to find the people who are the real deal. They did a whole episode on like signs from people who've died, which I found that was another really sweet one. And this one family where I think there was two daughters and their elderly mother. And they always said, hey mom, when you die, if you have a way of communicating with us, send us a cardinal. Like, we love birds. We love cardinals. That's our sign. And the day of her funeral or the day after her funeral, a cardinal straight up flew into their house and like hung out with them. They let them hold it. I mean, it literally hung out with them, and the daughters were just, they have video of it, and the daughters are holding the cardinal like, oh my God, this is mom, or at least a sign from mom. How often does a bird just fly into your house? You know,
that's like, it was too much to be a coincidence.
It was too much to be a coincidence. And they take the bird outside to kind of release it and have this moment of like setting mom free. And it flies right back on the lady and like, is like, no, I want to hang out with you. I mean, it was like the coolest video. The only episode I found like really out there that I was like, I just can't quite buy into it, but no offense, you know, meant at all. It's just hard for me to believe, was one where it was like basically at this camp, kind of like this mansion that hosts people and like teaches them how to be mediums, but also how to do seances, and how physical mediums are the ones who can like actually communicate during the seance. And they start talking about this ectoplasm that comes out in the form of ghosts, and it was a little out there for me. It's like, but these folks are, I mean, they come every week, same day, same time, to support this physical medium and communicate with the spirits. And the woman starts talking like the ghost of a little boy. And it's a little out there, but it's still interesting, because like, I really think these people believe in it. So maybe there is some truth to it. And I've never gotten an inside look like that. So it was fascinating that there is this whole other world and seances still going on. And you think of that as kind of like an old, pretty old school, people around the table and candles lit. And it still happens today. So definitely encourage people to check that out. And we'd love your feedback.
It reminds me of those shows like the mediums that have like a talk show basically, and they like pick people out of the crowd.
Yes.
Those always kind of freaked me out. I don't know why.
I've been to a medium once, and it was pretty spot on in the moment. My neighbor actually has a friend who does that, and she was training her students and needed volunteers. So I was like, sure. And it was pretty spot on, but it was also generic enough that it kind of could have been anybody. Like, she referenced like a family member who died of breast cancer, and like, we all have that, you know, to be honest. But then some of the things she talked about were more specific. So, and she didn't know my name or anything going into it. So, yeah, I thought it was cool. I didn't find it scary at all.
Right.
If anything, it was kind of nice to like reflect on people who've died and you know, maybe they're still looking out for you. That's cool and reassuring. So,
yeah.
Well, and coming up in a future episode, we're going to have our own opportunity to interview a psychic medium.
Very
and find
cool.
out what it's all about. This woman who commented on our Facebook page, she has some experience with this, and she's going to share all about it with us.
If you have your own story or know someone who does, email us at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook.
We've got a group you can join and a page that we keep updated with fun stuff. So join our conversation throughout the week and catch our new episode next week.
We'd love to hear from you.
Unrest in peace.